This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by Bed Intentions, a modern wellness brand that celebrates the evolving spectrum of pleasure.
Head to bedintentions.com to shop their natural self-care products. We spend a third of our lives in bed, so why not make it fun, safe, and easy? Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work, work. I'm Lou.
And I'm Loz, kicking things off with a good news story today. Actually, I've got a couple. The first one, I just thought this was cute, not necessarily good news, but adorable. I love cute news. Yeah, did you know?
We should do more cute news segments. Sorry to keep interrupting you. Keep going.
We should. Did you know that the act of sending your friends and family little videos and tweets and memes you find online is called pebbling, like how penguins bring pebbles back to their little penguin loved ones? So cute.
I love that so much. I saw that on Instagram.
I'm a massive little pebbler. I'm doing that all the time.
I'm pebbling too much. I should get paid for it.
24/7. And I also thought, in the nature of Pride Month, I found this little stat that I thought was pretty bloody good. Same-sex couples are statistically more likely to share the invisible load more equally. Research shows that 74% of same-sex parents share routine childcare versus 38% of different sex parents. So that's a good news story for those same-sex couples, not so much for those that aren't in that situation, but at least someone's leading the way, you know?
That's an incredible stat. Not surprising for mine, but an incredible stat nonetheless, and I'm so glad you brought that to us. Happy Pride Month. Quick update from me before we keep going. I'm going to call this a good news story. I wrote a Substack piece about postpartum defunking, which I think I coined that term. If not, I'm pretending I did.
Love it.
Part of that was to drink less of the Just Because wines midweek, which I've successfully been doing. I haven't stopped drinking altogether. I love a drink on the weekend, but I've stopped those midweek drinks. Second part of that was to commit to 3 classes a week. I went to 3 last week, 5 the week before, and 3 the week before that.
Oh my gosh,
so I have stuck to my guns. And Hayden is very much making it his job as well to make sure I get there. So a bit of good news. Did not return to exercising this quickly after Ray. If anyone's thinking, how the hell is she doing it? I will tell you how. It's because I need to get the fuck away from my family. Even though I love them so much, I need a break. That is it from me, Lozzie. Today, more than 2/3 of working parents consider quitting jobs because childcare costs, research finds. And what if motherhood isn't transformative at all? The Cut published 2 opposing articles, so 2 different people came at the same subject with a totally different opinion. I think they're both valid, incredibly interesting. We'll look at them. And lastly, let's talk about sex, baby. Can't quite sing it the way whoever sings that does, but I won't even try. In celebrating our partnership with Bed Intentions, we're all getting into bed together. So let's go.
Let's go. More than 2/3 of working parents consider quitting jobs because of childcare costs, research finds. This did not surprise me. The Working Parents Survey collected information from 1,501. Love the additional one there.
Working. I would have definitely got rid of one of those.
So would I.
I'd be like, nice and even.
I can't handle that. Even reading it's annoying. Working men and women with at least 1 child under 5 years old in March 2023. Respondents all worked in white-collar desk jobs and were evenly split between fully remote, hybrid, and in-office working arrangements. Of those surveyed, 73% said that they had taken a pay cut or reduced hours. We've touched on this before. Because of a lack of affordable childcare and return to office mandates. Constantly worrying about childcare logistics has a huge impact on parents' well-being and therefore on work. I don't know about you, Lou, but I definitely, and actually you had this the other day, I definitely get worried when your child's on like the cusp. So it's not like premeditated sickness. It's not like they were sick on the weekend. You're like, oh, damn it. I'm not going to be able to.
Premeditated. You know, like they planned
like this. They plan it, little bastards. No, I'm joking. They do though. No, they do not. But you know, on the weekend when you're like, oh, damn it. Like we're starting to get sick. We know that we're not going to be able to do childcare. Whereas you had the same situation the other day where you're like, oh, Ray should be fine to go to childcare today. And like half an hour later.
Plot twist. Everyone was like, that is not the plot twist I saw coming. If someone doesn't know what we're talking about, I've actually added it to a highlight on our Instagram, readyornot.pod, called Shit Mums Do or something like that. So you can read to know what we're talking about. Keep going. Sorry, Lozzie.
No, I'm just saying it makes it even more stressful and difficult when it's that unplanned sickness.
I feel like this time of year is the time that everyone keeps their kid home if they're on the cusp too. I feel like everyone at the moment is so worried about getting sick that they're not sending their kids. And that is the other dance you do is if I send you, are you going to be more sick? Do I keep you at home today and then you'll go tomorrow? Or if I send you today, are you going to not go for a whole week? That's what goes through my head.
Yeah, I agree with that. So off the back of the above findings, a report by the Centre of Policy Development has recommended 3 days of free childcare for some families with a small fee for others. The report argues that childcare should be seen in the same light as public education and Medicare, which is offered to all Australians. Agreed. What's next? The federal government is waiting on a final report from the Productivity Commission that is looking into universal childcare. The Productivity Commission. What?
You love productivity.
Like, what is this commission and why haven't we heard of it? Are they just being too productive? Like, let's just get something done. Let's just roll it into action. Why do there have to be so many commissions? Like, what's the productivity commission doing?
Imagine if the meeting ran over time. You'd be pretty embarrassed, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. You'd be with this. Where's the agenda? Let's get this stuff rolling. Anyway, I just had a bit of a laugh about that. Families should be offered free or cheap childcare regardless of their income or work status, according to a report released by the Centre for Policy Development. How do you feel about that, Lou?
I think that childcare absolutely should be free. It's better for everyone. It's better for this capitalist society that we live in because people have more money to spend on businesses.
Yes.
I think it's been proven that it's better for our economy.
Yes, but...
So fucking do it. Better for our mental health, better for everything.
But how do you feel about the income thing? So it should be free for everyone. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that it should be free for everyone, but I think it should be more accessible for lower socioeconomic people. So I think the highest earners in our society, if anyone has to pay, I genuinely think that they should pay a little bit more. And then it comes back from there. I guess sort of the scale that we are working with, but on a more accessible level for everyone.
So this is the thing that was a key finding of this report. On a number of other occasions, people have said, oh, you know, we need to increase a rebate, we need to base it on your income. Whereas this one actually said, no, ignore income. It needs to be free for all. We need to encourage all working women and working dads back into the workforce so that childcare isn't this factor that just sits in the back of your mind like, far out, I'm literally working to and pay even, it off.
Yeah, it's not even for me about encouraging too, because if you don't want to go back to paid work, great, but it's just option. Give people freedom to make good choices. And I'm always thinking about that single mum that maybe has left a really awful situation. The fact that she has to pay for childcare now makes me furious.
So one of the quotes in this article said, I haven't ever heard anyone in Australia argue that children of wealthier parents shouldn't be entitled to a place at their local primary school or their local high school because of their parents' income or wealth. Hence the reason we're saying it should be a blanket rule that applies to everyone. I saw a TikTok the other day that a friend sent me and it was fascinating. It was actually talking about childcare in regards to your wage, like as a family income earner, as a percentage of your wage. So I think what people forget is it was like a trajectory of like income, expenses, childcare, right? When you look at the cost of childcare on a low income of 80 grand combined or less, childcare, even with a 95% rebate, or is it 90% that it's capped at? I obviously don't get that rebate, sadly. I mean, not sadly, I'm lucky.
We need to check in with our own Childcare 101 guide because neither of us can remember.
But whatever it is, 90 or 95%, you are still, if you get the full rebate on that wage, you're still paying 34%, 34 point something percent of your income combined for childcare. That's a lot of like your percentage of your wage. And I think it also said for high income earners of $600,000 or more, let's say, they would still be paying on an average daily childcare rate of $154, I believe they said in this TikTok, which I don't think that's average anymore. Like we're paying $200, which will go up, which is absurd, but that's just what it costs.
Yeah.
Income earner was spending 15.16% of their wage. So there's a big difference between a high income earner, 15% of their wage, and a low income earner, 34% of their wage. It's a big disparity.
So if you're really wealthy, you're actually ending up with more money in your account than the person that gets the huge rebate.
Yes.
You obviously have to be an obscene level of wealth, but that's really interesting.
It is really interesting because I think what people are forgetting is, how do I reframe this? Sometimes you have a conversation, whether it be with friends or whoever it might be, and you're like, oh gosh, they're getting like 80% back. That's, you know, how lucky are they? And you might be getting 20% back or whatever your rebate may be. But where people come unstuck is they don't consider the rebate to be relative. It's relative yes. to your wage. So even yeah, if that
like
person's
free money coming in.
Exactly. Even if that person's getting 80% back or a 90% rebate or 50% rebate, in terms of their total outgoings, it's still an enormous percentage of what they're earning.
Huge.
Yeah.
I'm all for this. Let's move to Sweden within our own country, I mean. Sweden, 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 as Phoebe Simmons recently said on an episode of Ready or Not, take me there in my own backyard.
What if motherhood isn't transformative at all? We're often told that becoming a parent will alter one's identity. I've heard this so many times. The author of this article says, for me, that change never came. To have a child, it is often said, is to transform one's identity. What this might have meant in the past is more or less obvious, with a few exceptions for the better part of history. To have a child meant it was time for a woman to say her final farewells to whatever public existence she managed to forge up until that point. But now there is another, more mysterious change that becoming a mother is understood to imply. This change is supposed to reconfigure the deepest core of one's being. A friend warned I would not be able to think for months after birth, but I replied to work emails from the hospital bed. They didn't make less sense. They didn't seem any less important. Strangely, all the same things continued to matter to me. The same philosophical questions, the same friends and their same problems, the same politics, the same petty gossip. Parents, mothers especially, like to claim that they have become better people subsequent to the birth of their children. Lou, did you feel this? Do you agree with this? And did you actually feel like your identity changed?
I am shaken to the very core of my being from becoming a mum. I don't think it's made me a better person. I don't necessarily think I'm a different person. But what it has done to me is magnify the pleasure and pain in my life to no end. I am unequivocally forever changed from becoming a mother, but it's not in the sense that my identity has shifted. It's not that I care about different things. It's not that I think what my non-parent friends are talking about is less important. It's that I worry more. I have more weight on my shoulders, both figuratively and sometimes literally.
Yep.
And I feel deeper about nearly everything.
Okay.
What about you?
I read this article and in some ways I really agreed. I think there's this big, I wouldn't say stigma, and it's not pressure. It's like this, like not a cult. So what's the word I'm looking for? I'm unsure, but there's this movement that women really change after they have kids. And sometimes I think it's in a positive light and sometimes I think it's in a negative light, but it's a common theme that like once you're a mom, you're like in this club and your life's so different and you're rewired. And I don't know if I felt like that.
But even as you say that, Loz, that's so true. Your life is so different now. Like your day-to-day is completely different
it's
to different, before you
had kids. But the things I cared about before I had children and the things that I think are the core concept of like my values, my morals, my work ethic, my goals, like all the things that I think contribute to my identity, like how I see myself, I don't think have shifted significantly
I'll
enough
pay that totally.
To think to myself, whoa, that was the biggest point in my life where a new identity was born.
I agreed with the first half, but I don't know how to explain that I feel profoundly different, but not identity-wise. It's like my experience with the world has changed, but who I am hasn't. I'm no smarter than I was.
Yeah.
I'm no better than I was. But the way I experience, consume, and feel about the world, I think, does feel different.
Yes, that's spot on.
The thing that I find really interesting about this is I think there's a lot of whataboutisms in motherhood.
Yeah.
you can't really say that it's changed you, because what does that mean for the people that haven't become parents? There's a lot of things that you're not allowed to talk about. And in some regard, I get that. I think even pre-kids, I would have rolled my eyes about some of the things my mum friends were talking about and thought the exact, I guess, opposite of what I just said. But I think it is a profound shift for so many people. I think the two things can be true, though. The reverse article came from Miranda Rake, I think it was. And what she said was, actually, having a baby changes you forever. The lasting biological and psychological metamorphosis is part of a life phase known as matrescence. Matrescence is only equal to adolescence in terms of what our bodies actually go through. It's quite interesting because a lot of people saw that first article that you referenced and felt like it was denying this huge shift that so many others were going through. So many mums came at that angle really angry that this article was almost flattening or dulling the changes they went through. On the other hand, the second article, which references Lucy Jones's book Matrescence, which has been on my list for so long, believes that by saying that matrescence is this wild thing that we go through that is so important and so radicalizing of who we are as people, that it disregards the people that didn't feel that way. I think it's really hard in motherhood. It's all polarizing because everyone's experiences are so different.
Yeah.
What I think is that we need to make space for both these pizzas. I would love a pizza.
Yeah.
I ate a whole pizza on the weekend while we're at it, just so that you know, over two sittings. But my God, did I eat some bloody margarita on the weekend. What I noticed when reading these pieces were that people feel very up in arms about whatever their angle is. And they don't make much space for the other angle. So what I was really left thinking was both things can be true.
They can be true, yes. It is difficult, though, when you listen to people. And sometimes I agree with it and sometimes I don't. But when people say things like, being a mum is the hardest job in the world. And, yeah, like sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not, man. Like sometimes it's genuinely not. Sometimes I'm at the park. I'm not saving lives. I'm not doing open heart surgery. I'm not helping children in a third world country. Like, it's not that hard. And people's perspective and the way they talk about it sometimes, for me anyway, is so polarizing.
But I reckon even you just saying it's not that hard would be polarizing, because there'll be a mum listening to this at home that has postnatal anxiety and is going through the hardest time of her life. So that's why it's such a fraught topic, because the experiences are so polarizing.
They're so different.
I did screen grab one tile from the Cut's original piece about what if motherhood isn't transformative at all. And it said, if you have known love, your love for your child will be very much like what you think it will be. What is so special about this love isn't how exotic, mysterious, or astounding it is, but how simple and familiar. I could not agree less with that statement.
Really?
I find it astounding, the love I have for my children. It's scary. I'm in Pilates knowing that Hayden's lit a fire with intrusive thoughts that Posey's been left too close to the fire. I've never, ever had that thought about my parents, who I love deeply. I've never worried about them. I worry about them, to be honest, all the time. But it's different. The love that I have for my children is absolutely polarizing. And I understand that for some people it's not, but that's just used as a blanket term here. She doesn't even say in her experience. And I couldn't agree less with that statement.
Oh, I almost have to disagree on that.
Don't almost, just disagree.
Because I think some of your points are really valid. Mm. I think my fear of something happening or of them being hurt or them having heartbreak or anything of that is far greater than I would have for like a friend or a relative or something like that, because their sadness would make me sad, as in it's like that protective mechanism. But the love I have for my children really is on a similar level to like the many great loves of my life, like my dad or my brother or my husband. I mean, I would do more for my children because they're smaller and weaker and need more help. But I do think,
on a practical level,
but I do think, for example, if, like, God forbid, something happened to my like very close inner circle of friends or family and they required that level of care that I have to give my children, I would be there in a heartbeat. I have that same love.
I'm so torn by this because I love people close to me in a similar way in that it's unconditional.
But is it because your children are younger?
Really?
Because they need more care. Like, I think sometimes you look at vulnerability and you want to wrap that into it because they're vulnerable.
I'm not sure.
Whereas you look at your parents, you're like, you're not.
But our parents are getting, I mean, they're not vulnerable not at the yet. Moment, but I do think they're more vulnerable to health conditions, for example. But do you know that we keep some of the cells that we carry when we give birth for 27 years? So some of the cells to do with birthing our children stay in us. I just think that to say that the love is similar, and now I'm worried about offending people who haven't had kids because.
You can't worry about that.
I know, but it's not to say that they don't love on the same level. I think what I'm trying to say is that it's a scarier love. I think that's it for me.
Yeah.
It terrifies me more.
Yeah. I think there's more at one point, more to lose, more at risk.
Yeah. Maybe it's to do with the responsibility that we brought these children into the world. I'm not sure what it is. Something that I did agree with was this statement. Parents, mothers especially, like to claim they have become better people subsequent to the birth of their children.
Yeah.
I'm not here to call anyone's bluff or forswear the possibility of my own personal growth in the future, but I did not unearth new ethical or emotional resources. That I absolutely agree with. I am not a better person than my friend that has not become a mum.
Nah, neither am I.
Do I feel differently about the world? Maybe I do, maybe I don't, but I am categorically not a better person than her.
Yeah, I would agree with you when you said sometimes you can be worse because I do think kids, like,
she nasty.
Like that fire in you. I'm like, am I getting older and my patience is less? Are you just irritating? Like, are you getting on my nerves or which one is it?
I think tell we me. Tick both boxes there, my darling. And speaking of, what did I just say, actually?
Tick boxes.
Because I had a great segue then.
Oh, speaking of ticking boxes.
Okay, Lozzie, I see where you're going there. Let's talk boxes. It's poll time, baby.
Not where I was going, but I love it.
Oh, I know what it was just quickly. We're really going on a tangent here, but I was going to say, and speaking of getting nasty, but let's tick some boxes. All right, Lozzie, so we are polling hard today. Wow, I've got to stop using disgusting puns. I didn't even mean that one.
Polling.
This episode is polling. No, I meant the hard bit, darling. But
sorry. I was like, do you mean plowing? Because I'm like, I've never heard of polling.
Do you know what the first thing I thought to myself when I thought about what we were discussing in the poll today was, don't be immature about it. And what have I done? I've been very immature the last 5 minutes. I'm actually going to go out now and be a bit of an adult.
Okay, go.
So this episode is brought to you by Bed Intentions, which is a really bloody brilliant lube product.
It is.
With very powerful messages about empowering women and non-binary folk. So we can't wait to share more of that with you. And we've got a very, very good competition going up today, which I was pretty proud of the creative concept we came up with.
There you go, girl.
So the poll was all around sex. We have been there before, but we're going,
we're going deeper. We've got a couple of kids. We have been there. What do you know?
But I was just laughing that I was about to say another pun of we're going deeper. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Luke.
This is happening without me meaning to.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear. Let's get into it. How many months postpartum were you when you had sex after baby one? Ooh. Lozzie, are you comfortable answering first?
Oh, gosh. I was a while. I was definitely a while. I don't know. Probably three?
I was four because, yeah.
Or maybe more.
It was July.
Maybe it was four.
We're at an Airbnb.
Oh, gosh, you can pinpoint it.
4 months. Yeah, well, because we were away one weekend and I remember thinking, Lucy, for God's sakes, have some sex.
Oh, really?
So I decided that weekend would be the weekend to do it.
I actually can't even remember.
So what do you think the poll has said? 1 to 3 months was option A, 3 to 5 months option B, 5 to 7 months option C, over 7 months option D.
Maybe 3 to 5?
So very, very close quarters. I'm going to almost give that to you. 1 to 3 months won with 37%. Oh. 3 to 5 months came in at a very narrow 36%. 5 to 7 months, 14%. Over 7 months, 13%. I asked for the multiple parent people. Can't think of a better terminology for that.
Yep.
What about after baby two? What about after Zave for you?
I think quicker after Zave. I can't pinpoint the time though. It definitely wasn't 6 weeks though. Like I was just, I think I wasn't
absolutely
bleeding
not.
Anymore, but I was still a bit like, I just had milk everywhere. I just didn't feel like me yet.
The milk's a big one to me, and I'm going to get to that.
So I can't.
We had the same options. Mm-hmm. We had this, and not in a good way. Fuck, Lucy. Okay, I'm sorry.
Keep going. You're on
this. This is so immature.
I like it.
What do you think the pollers said this time around?
I would say quicker after baby number two.
Yeah, I don't know why I was surprised by this. I thought in one breath it makes more sense. I've done something like get back to exercise quicker. So I see that people's needs and ability to get back something and maybe a bit better, I don't know, in tune because you've done it before. But on the flip side, I thought you've now got two kids. Where the fuck are you doing it? But you are absolutely right. Mm. 1 to 3 months, 45%.
Yeah.
3 to 5 months, 28%. 5 to 7 months, 12%. And after 7 months, 15%.
Yeah.
Next question, when you had sex for the first time, did you feel nervous at all beforehand? Firstly, did you?
Yes, with Sienna, I did because you're like, has everything changed? Is it going to be the same? Or it's like those little thoughts that creep into your head. And then to be honest, like your partner doesn't give a shit anyway, but and nothing really changes.
So the options were very a little and nope. I wouldn't say nothing changes because some people have injuries and pain and whatnot, but obviously
very
you're
true
about in your circumstance.
Yes.
But the options were very a little and nope. What do you think won out there?
I'm going to say nope. No.
So only 7% of people weren't nervous. And then the other two were very even.
Sorry. I renege on that.
Oh, you renege.
I'm going to say, I thought you were talking about if it feels the same. No.
We're talking about nerves.
Everyone's nervous. I've no doubt. Even if they say they're not, they're lying.
Yeah, it's a very even split between very and a little, 47% for very, which I'd say I was in that camp. Mine was more worried about physically just how it would feel
and what was going
on in there.
Yeah.
And a little was 46%, nope was 7%. Next question, if you did feel nervous, where did that come from? Of course, I got so many DMs saying all of the above, but it's never fun to guess all of the above. So that wasn't an option, but with hindsight, maybe it should have been. Physically feeling different was option one.
Yeah.
A traumatic birth or injury related was option two. Feeling different about intimacy was option three, or not feeling that into it was option four. I've randomly gone from your A's and B's to your ones and twos, so stay with me. What do you think was the most popular?
A?
Yeah, so physically feeling different was 45%. Traumatic birth or injury was 20%, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Feeling different about intimacy was 15% and not feeling that into it, which also makes a lot of sense, was 20%. Again, we had a lot of people that said all of the above for that one. Next up, when you first had sex after baby, what was the main driver? A, for intimacy's sake, wanted to connect with my partner.
Yeah.
B, genuinely felt like it. Or C, for my partner's sake. What do you think won there?
I would actually put another one just to rip the Band-Aid off, just to get done.
Yes.
I think for your own mental, like you're like, I just need to do it. Like it's like a mental
thing. Actually DM'd me that, Lozzie. Yeah. You're right. So for intimacy's sake was 52%, mm-hmm. which I could argue relates a little bit to what you're saying. It's just like, oh,
it's going to get back on and be like,
better get intimate.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. 31% was for my partner's sake and 15% was genuinely felt like it. Did you have any pain afterwards? Do you remember if you did?
No. Nah.
You didn't?
No.
So no was 67%. When this poll started, it was really 50-50 at the start, which broke my heart. And I still hate that 33% of people did have pain afterwards because, as we know, that shouldn't be normal and there are things we can do about it.
Yes.
But, yeah, it ended up being 67% of people did not feel pain afterwards.
But I think that's what gets in your head.
I can't remember if I did, so it can't have been much.
I think that's what gets in your head. You're like, oh, is it going to be painful?
Totally.
Like, is anything going to happen? Has it changed over there, down there? Wherever.
Over there.
Is it changed?
I'll tell you what, my vagina does feel like it's in the other room at the moment. So not surprised by that use.
Oh, God.
So the next question was, did you have any conversations before having sex about how you were feeling, what to expect and whatnot? And if you did, can you give us some advice? I'll give you some of the best answers here. Someone said, I feel very differently about my body, so I didn't want to be touched on the breasts or anything like that because they're for feeding. I could not agree more. All of a sudden, my boobs, that used to be a pleasure point for me, that is somewhere I do not want to be touched.
Nah.
Stay away while I'm feeding.
Yeah.
Cannot agree with that one more. Someone said, to be honest, I said I felt like a floppy old mess and that I wasn't sure, but tried. And I wasn't sure that I'd enjoy it, but tried anyway, and it wasn't good. I'm sorry, but thank you for sharing
that.
That is funny, but I'm sorry. Yep. Totally know how that feels. Someone discussed dryness, that I probably wouldn't enjoy it, and tips to make it better.
This is why lube someone is so important. Said, this is why good amen. Lube, good lube yeah. is so
and
important.
And a lot of people said lube, lube, lube.
Yeah, but you've got to get, it needs to that. Be good. I'm sorry. It there's just a good. Lot of shit and out there.
There's something about the female empowerment message coming through from Bed Intentions too that just makes you a bit sort of more prone.
And it
to
looks
trauma.
Nice.
A bit more happy about it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My partner was aware how scared I was about it, maybe feeling different or hurting. Tip, lube is your friend again. Last one here. My partner asked if I was ready and said he was nervous about how I felt. So I'm glad that the partners are thinking about that. And I did say last one, but this is an important one too. Didn't expect so much pain, so had to navigate this via communication.
Yeah.
So open communication and lube is what I'm taking from all of that. If you didn't feel like having sex for a long time, what do you think was the main reason? Another all of the above would have gone, not gone astray here, but we didn't give that option. Tiredness is option one. Two, touched out, option two. Postnatal depression and or anxiety is option three. And tension with partner is option four. Thoughts?
Oh, probably tiredness, I would say.
So tiredness and two touched out were 42% each.
Yeah.
I'm more in the two touched out camp than the tiredness, yeah. but obviously both are pretty full on. Postnatal depression and or anxiety came in at 9% and tension with partner 7%.
Okay.
Next up, how did you feel emotionally after having sex for the first time post-birth? The options were relieved to get the first time done, as you mentioned before.
Yeah.
A bit weird, nothing specific or great.
Oh, I think relieved.
100%. So that was, well, it wasn't 100%. How okay. am I confusing? With the stats, it was 55%. Nothing specific was 19%. A bit weird was 13%. And great was 13%.
Excellent.
I reckon I felt relieved after the first time, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Have your sexual needs changed post-baby? If so, we'd like to know how. Mm. I'll read a few of the top ones out to you. I crave the sexual connection more, and sex actually feels a lot better since pre-baby. That is brilliant. I am very happy for that person. Most people said that it's changed in the total opposite direction, that they just don't have the same drive that they do.
Yeah.
One person said, timing is everything. It's nighttime or nothing because I'm up at a jolt every day at 5:30
yep.
and have to get up straight away because I have no time. Someone said rapid decline, and someone said far more interested and confident in ensuring I'm getting as much pleasure as he is.
Amen, sister.
That's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
That's
beautiful.
That's stunning. Thank you so much for sharing that. Did your sex life improve the older your children got? Someone DM'd saying, I fucking hope so. That really made me laugh.
Oh, that's good.
So the options here are just your basic yes and no. Give me a guess.
Yes.
Yes is 75% yeah. and no is 25%. And I'm going to guess that depends. Like, obviously, if your child is 6 months going to 7 months, that might not be a yes. But maybe if your child is turning 2 to 3, maybe that is a yes.
So yeah.
Hopefully we see a bit of a jump for everyone in the near future. Next one, and this is very specific to me. When I'm breastfeeding, I genuinely do not have any sex drive. When I stopped breastfeeding with Ray, all of a sudden I wanted to have sex again. So this was very much informed from my own experience. Mm-hmm. If you breastfed, did you notice your libido come back when you stopped? Yes or no were the options here.
Well, I'm going to say yes based off your experience.
Yeah, so 60% said yes. I honestly thought it would be higher. That's literally just based off my own experience. Mm. And nope was 40%. So a pretty decent split there, or a pretty even split, I should say.
Yeah.
Did you have much of a libido during pregnancy? Have you ever wanted sex during pregnancy, or do you go the way that I go?
I'm the other way.
Yeah, what do you think the poll has said?
I've heard it from both camps. So
yeah, I've heard really strong from both camps.
Yeah, me too.
Like some people are fuck no, and some people are like,
oh my God. Yeah, because you're meant to have a lot more nerve sensations and whatever, or nerve, what is it?
Oh, that's
nerves are heightened or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Wasn't the case for me. I'm not sure. I'm going to say no because that was my experience.
Yeah, so 60% no, yes, 40%. I'm really proud of those pregnant people that are feeling down and dirty. Good on ya. Next question, is sex currently feeling like a chore or something you enjoy? So answers or options were chore, enjoyable, or begins as a chore, ends enjoyment.
Oh.
Ends in enjoyment. We know how that ends sometimes. What did you think was the most common answer here?
I would say not the chore one, enjoyment.
Enjoyable.
Yeah, because okay. I think you've got less time.
Yeah, 49% said begins as a chore but ends up being enjoyable.
Yeah.
Enjoyable is 25% and chore is 26%. So those are pretty even.
Yeah. I also will say on that, I think the older you get, the less chore-like it becomes because you're like, fuck that, I've got enough chores in my life. I don't want to add another
Let's
one to my list.
Fun.
So either it's for enjoyment or it's not at all. There's the chores
yeah,
go.
Yeah. It's black and white. Exactly. There's no gray here.
Yeah.
What do you do to get in the mood when you're feeling tired, touched out, overworked, et cetera? Do you have any tips here?
To get in the mood. I read something the other day, and the more I thought about it, the more I agreed with it. There's some form of research, I'm going to find it, that says if you can hold a kiss for more than 6 seconds.
My friend told me about this the other day.
Yes, it ignites like this oxytocin.
I think it's 7 seconds maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Yes.
It gets you like in the mood. And it's because I think a lot of the time as you get older, you kiss less, like passionately. But if you just hold that peck for a bit longer, I do actually think it puts you in this frame of mind where you're like,
yeah,
that was good.
We're on here, sweetie.
Exactly.
I liked that. Fuck, I forgot you even had a mouth and lips. Wow. Oh, my God.
Don't you think?
Fuck.
Like, don't That's you actually terrible. Think?
I'm being so immature. No, I agree. I've heard that. My friend the other day, she talked about it with a hug, but she said if you connect for more than 7 seconds, it ignites something that makes you feel intimate.
Yeah, so.
I can see that Posey is crying.
Just, I don't know, really just linger.
Hold on for a little bit longer. We know your day is busy, but getting busy
exactly.
might
7 seconds,
you
can do it.
Yeah, it's not much. 7 seconds. In the
I knew you were going to oh sing that. Actually, I thought you were going to sing that.
And when
seven
I get
seconds
that
away. You know that song?
What? I don't. I'm singing, you can say what you want, but anyway, I cannot sing. So the advice given from others was watch Bridgerton, which is something
oh
I
oh, my God.
After Hayes and I
night.
Had been trying for a while.
Fucking hell.
When Hayes and I were trying for Ray, I ended up putting Bridgerton on after the 6 months point to feel like I could get in the mood because I was just,
it's
I had no
so
libido
sexy.
Left at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to get into season 3. I
oh, my
done it
God.
Yet.
It's so good.
Partner giving a massage always does the trick. Some time to feel good in my own skin and brain, like a self-care activity. I love that one. Erotic fiction, and I'm going to link in the show notes. This is Tori from The First Word. She gave a link to URL that has some really great resources.
Okay.
Put in the effort with date night or something similar.
Yep.
And the last one here was have champagne if you're sort of just needing that boost of confidence or giddiness.
Have a drink.
Have a drink.
Have a drink.
Get jiggy with it. Na, 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 na. And last one from me, Lozzie. At the very end of the poll, it reminded me, and I'm so aware that people try for much longer than 8 months, mm-hmm. but when it got to the 6 month mark with Ray, I remember feeling really anxious about trying to conceive. It almost made me cry.
Oh, it's exhausting.
You get to the point where you're just like, I don't want to do this,
yeah.
but I do want to do this.
Yeah.
So I asked for advice there when you're trying to conceive and it feels like a chore.
Mm-hmm.
One person said, talk it out with your partner. Having a strong emotional support and understanding is sometimes sexier than sex.
Yeah.
Love that. I added the sexier than sex. I don't know why. She just said it's sometimes sexy. That was really weird. I don't know why I did that.
Okay.
Don't just make it about the schedule. Cook a nice meal, go to a gig, try new things. And last piece of really great advice here. The only reason we got through it is because we communicated with each other, let go of expectations of what sex was meant to be, layered in other ways to connect with each other, and reminded ourselves it's just a phase. I cried a lot during or post-sex. It was so taxing. That really hurts my heart.
Yeah.
So that's some really great advice, really about connection, having conversation, and finding other ways to find intimacy, I guess, that might lead to more intimate sex. We are running out of time here, Lozzie. Give us a quick tip.
One tip. Instead of saying, I might be wrong about this, but I have that.
Oh,
I do this.
I always do that.
Yeah, I do it a lot in meetings. I'm like, oh, I'm not really sure, but instead of saying something like that, say, here's what I understand, and then blurt it out. So you're reframing it.
I'm going to use that.
Such a better perspective. It puts you in boss that you're meant to be instead of doubting yourself.
You boss bitch.
You boss.
I dare say women are the ones saying I may be wrong, but I know I've done that a million times. My quick tip is to head over to our Substack if you haven't already. We now have 6 interviews with different mums about how I make work work. It's a really great extension of the Ready or Not interview podcast. And they're just really great chats. The most recent one is with a mum who actually quit paid work and is on a pause because it was all too much. Yep. And if you're in that camp, which I get a lot of DMs about that, then please head over there. You are not alone. And that is it for today, Lozzie. Wrap us up.
It is. If you have loved today's episode of Witching Hour, please leave us a lovely review. Any review is fine. 5 stars or more would be excellent. More. 5 stars or more.
Yeah. Can you do 6?
Go off the charts. Otherwise, follow us on readyornot.pod and we will see you, chat to you, be in your ears next week.